We'll call the Judiciary Committee meeting together. It's looks like 1:37 on Friday the 29th. Senator Dyson with us, Senator Wilkowski with us, Chair Cargill. Today, the plan is to bring up the revisers bill, House Bill 81, to look at House Bill 83, have its introduction today. We'll do Senate Bill 36. There's an amendment laying on the members' table. We will consider that, and my intention is to try to move that today. And then House Bill 69, my intention is to introduce a new CS, open up public testimony, give you a chance to discuss it amongst the committee members. We'll hold that public testimony open for Monday, and my intention is to hold it up for movement on Monday. So that's kind of at least my plan. We'll see how the votes go. With today, we have the reviser, Catherine Kurtz, with us. Catherine, just introduce yourself and introduce the bill to us.
My name is Catherine Kurtz. I'm the reviser of statutes. I work over in LAA Legal. And the reviser's bill is something that we do every year to clean up things in the statutes. The bill is prompted by a statute that requires us to prepare a bill for alleged counsel that corrects and removes deficiencies, conflicts, and obsolete provisions in the statutes. So that's what this is about. I'll quickly go through the sections, many of the sections grouped together. And if you have questions, please just stop me.
Thank you.
But starting with Section 1, in the Alcohol Beverage Control Board statutes, we have previously created this new license, the Destination Resort License. When that was done, it didn't get added to the statute that lists all the types of licenses and permits available under the title. So Section 1 adds it to that list. Section 2 updates the name of an accreditation organization that has changed its name. Section 3 relates to nursing home administrators who were licensed under emergency regs, which were adopted in 1974. The Department of Law assures me that no one is currently licensed under that provision anymore. So that one's obsolete. And I should mention that the Department of Law has had the opportunity to review this bill. They are always very helpful in providing suggestions and feedback. So they have seen this. Sections 4 and 6 relate to a definition. The definition is of the term oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility, and we had a problem where the term defined didn't exactly match usage in the statutes. So here it's changing a word in the definition from plural to singular so that the defined term actually matches up what's being used in the statutes. And then Section 6 does the same thing. It's used in more than just those two places, but now it's going to be uniform.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Regarding Section 6, probably 5 or 6 years ago, we changed an and to an or, and it brought in an additional $160 million to the state. And can you just, and it was regarding oil and gas, can you just explain what that lines 25 through 28 on page 4, what exactly that is dealing with?
Yeah, that is actually dealing with offenses against property. And first I need to back up. I'm not sure whether you're referring to this particular statute. And an or can make a very big difference. This particular and an or relates to offenses against property in Section 4 and in Section 6, terroristic threatening. So these are criminal statutes that relate to oil or gas pipeline or supporting facility.
Okay. All right. Got it. Thank you.
So, yeah.
I'm good.
Yep.
Okay.
Good explanation. Title 11.
So, that's Sections 4 and 6. Section 5 had a missing preposition. It just didn't read right. So, we added the preposition to. Sections 7 makes the term regional educational attendance area consistent with usage elsewhere. It always has the AL. It just said education. Sections 8 and 9 change election district to house district, which is something that we had done throughout the statutes a number of years ago, but these two election districts crept in. So this is just taking that back to what the standard term is through the statutes. Sections 10 through 17 remove the phrase, but not limited to, in a section relating to safe employment and in several definitions relating to safety glazing. We actually have a statute. It's an AS0110040B that says the word including should always be read as though it were followed by the words, but not limited to. So that's the practice, that's the style that both the drafting manual and the statutes have prescribed for us, and this is bringing those definitions into consistency with that.
Senator Wilkowski has a question.
Can you point me to where that is? Can you point me to that statute that says that it reads it the way you're saying it, or that?
Yes, sir. It's AS0110040B, as in boy.
And that universally says if you have the word including, you don't need to add the but not limited to?
Yes.
Okay.
Through the chair.
Thank you, Catherine. Continue.
There's one other change from workplace, two words to workplace in section 10, which is something our editor prefers, works with Webster's. Section 18 replaces a reference to a regulation that has been repealed with a generic reference to a regulation adopted by the department. And that is something, because regulations change so much more frequently than the statutes, that is the preferred approach. My understanding is that they do, again, have regulations, but they've moved. Section 18 is the one I just talked about. Sections 19 through 21, 24 through 27, and 31 all relate to the Commissioner of the Department of Transportation. In the title on Public Works, Buildings, and Improvements, there is no definition of commissioner currently. There's one that applies only to Chapter 31 of that title, and we've been a little bit inconsistent about how we use the term Commissioner of the Department, Commissioner of Transportation. So at Pam Finley's suggestion, what this does is create a new definition for the whole title so that it doesn't need to be spelled out every time. We can just say commissioner, and the definition's at the back that says by that we mean Commissioner of Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So that's not going to change the meaning of any of these current references, but it will clean things up, save a few words, and make it consistent. Sections 22 and 23 have to do with dates that have gone by, so it simply removes those dates from the code. Section 28 relates to the online public notice system, which requires the Attorney General to post summaries of opinions that they've published, and it essentially removes an outdated reference. They no longer distinguish between formal and informal opinions, so this updates that reference so that it reflects the current practice of the Attorney General's office. Section 29 is an ADA statute. Last year, the legislature established the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Development Program in ADA, and it amended a number of sections. This section appears to have been left out as an oversight. It's the purpose section. So there are a number of statutes that permit ADA to go do things with energy now. But it got left off the list in 4488.070, so this puts it in. It's a purpose section. It's not a substantive moving part. They already have the authority elsewhere, so this brings their purpose section into alignment with what the legislature did last year in the other sections that are related. Section 30 resolves an internal conflict between subsections A and I of 4712.310. A starts right off with except as specified in and B through G of this section. When we added I, we should have put I on that list because I is another exception. So this just flags it for the listener or for the reader right up front. There are exceptions to the rule we're about to state. They're listed in these sections in B through G and I. Section 31 is a repealer. The repeal is of the definition of the Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities that referred only to one chapter. And then there's an immediate effective date.
Chairman?
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, thank you. You have a fascinating job. And I appreciate it. Tell me again how you all get suggestions for things that should be revised.
We get suggestions from various sources. The Attorney General's office will alert us. Deborah Baer is good about noticing things, and if they see something,
I heard that.
They can suggest it to us. We also get suggestions from our publisher when they notice an inconsistency.
Duke Law Review?
No. Actually, LexisNexis Corporation that publishes the Alaska statutes in the blue-bound books, they provide the editorial content, but they also go through and in the process of taking things, we give them the session laws and instructions about exactly how to put them in the books. In that process, they sometimes notice things.
Okay.
That
just, you don't need to tell me all the details. Just tell me the sources.
Another source would be the attorneys in our office. We are required to review the Alaska statutes on a periodic basis, so we do title reviews and attorneys make suggestions. If a member of the public picks up the phone and calls me and tells me that we've got something that's wrong or misspelled, I will look at that, although that's rare. Generally, the bulk of the suggestions come from the title reviews, the publishers, or the AG's office.
So, so do you not get things from the Duke Law Review?
Personally, there is. I have never been contacted by the Duke Law Review.
Wow, not pejorative, but that's astonishing to me. As I understood it, we have a contract with them, and they look at stuff and make suggestions and comments on it.
I can speak to the contract between LexisNexis and the Legislative Affairs Agency, but I am not able to comment for you on who the parties to that contract are.
Okay.
Certainly, if you or they have suggestions about omissions or obsolete provisions, please let me know.
Thank you. Thank you.
Questions? You know, I looked through it. The catch that Senator Wilkowski got, I thought was a good catch. Did you get a chance to satisfy yourself on that, Senator?
I did. Thank you.
All right. I looked through the repealer. I think the repealer looked good because you're really resetting the definition. You know, sometimes when we're making law, we do things for emphasis. So somebody might have lost an emphasis, but I don't know that it changes any meaning. I haven't seen. I'm satisfied with it. Yeah, I don't have any further questions. Any further comment? All right. Thank you, Catherine. I'm just going to hold this over since I've got two members who may want to, noodle through it. But my intention is to move it on Monday. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll set House Bill 81 aside. We have House Bill 83. Representative Keller has a bill dealing with federal statutes, regulations, and presidential executive orders. An issue that we love dealing with here. For the representative, we have Mr. Pound. Mr. Pound, why don't you put yourself on the record and introduce this bill for us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Pound. I'm staff representative Wes Keller, who, as you're probably well aware, is quite busy over on the other side in the same committee working as the chair. He apologizes for not being here today. House Bill 83 deals with federal statutes, regulations, executive, and even secretarial orders from federal agencies and the White House. In some cases, they have been improperly interpreted to have an effect of law. In most cases, they are written by unelected officials. Many of those rules have all but brought Alaska's economy to a halt. Many ignore the Constitution and, in some cases, the basic rules of adoption. House Bill 83 is based on that last statement. When a federal statute, regulation, executive order, or secretarial order is considered unconstitutional or improperly adopted, the Attorney General will let us know. When I say us, I mean this Judiciary Committee and your counterparts on the other side. This information will give the committees an opportunity to determine how to proceed. It imposes our rights under the 10th Amendment of the Constitution. It gives this legislature the opportunity to look closely at those rules and decide if we should consider boldly saying that we do not accept them and that we preempt them in the state of Alaska. House Bill 83 places in statute language that clearly states the relationship between the state and federal governments as established in the Constitution. This is a procedural bill that I believe will give some merit to an ongoing problem between the federal government and the state of Alaska. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Any questions for the Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand this, the crux of the bill is that the Attorney General is to review federal statutes, regulations, executive orders, actions, secretarial orders, to make sure that they don't conflict with state law?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I apologize. Essentially, they're reviewing them now. And what they will do is provide that information that if they do not meet constitutional or they're improperly filed, whether they bring them up under state law, I don't believe that's part of the review process. I think that'll be up to the determination of the Judiciary Committees.
So if I could, Mr. Chair. So this bill, they're already reviewing these laws. How much time does that take for the Attorney General to review every, we're putting this in law now. What are we putting sort of a time frame on how quickly? Because I'm imagining there's tens, if not hundreds of thousands of pages of executive orders and secretarial orders and federal statutes and regulations. Are we putting some sort of a timeline on the Attorney General to review every one of these documents that's come out that comes out through this new law that we're passing?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I can't speak to how the Attorney General does it now. I realize that they do provide information to the administration, to the governor's office, and all we're doing is making sure that we're included in the loop.
And are we, if I could, Mr. Chair, so all we're asking for with this bill is that the Attorney General not do anything new, but rather that they just simply notify the state legislative bodies, chairs, that if there are conflicts?
The Chair, that is correct, Senator.
If I could, Mr. Yes. Are you aware, or could you? Are there any specific statutes, regulations, or executive orders that you believe are currently being violated?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, there's one that I find that is rather interesting as an interpretation from the Department of Veterans Affairs that came out just recently. That was sent out in a letter to veterans having to do with their ability for incompetency, where when a veteran now is determined to be incompetent, primarily in the past it has always been the policy of the federal government and the Veterans Administration to appoint someone to take care of the affairs of that individual veteran. They have now added new language that says that if you were determined to be incompetent by the Veterans Administration, and if I could make the Chair's right to read this from the letter, a determination of incompetency will prohibit you from purchasing, possessing, receiving, or transporting a firearm or ammunition. If you knowingly violate any of these provisions, you may be fined, imprisoned, or both under the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act. That's a little bit excessive oversight based on a regulation that came out of the Veterans Administration, in my opinion, Senator.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Wilkowski.
Is the Attorney General filing a lawsuit to overturn that for being unconstitutional?
Through the Chair, Senator, I am unaware of that.
I mean, Mr. Chair, if there's an unconstitutional law that's on the books that's prohibiting veterans from getting firearms, I would certainly hope that the Attorney General would be taking action against those things. That's really the answer. If there's unconstitutional laws, our recourse is to file a lawsuit to declare those unconstitutional.
Right. Through the Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I would expect at some point in time that is possibly going to happen.
And have you asked for an increment in the budget, or is that something that we should be trying to get into one of our budgets so that we can fund this litigation?
Through the chair, Senator Wallachowski, at the present time, the Attorney General's office has provided us a zero fiscal note. And I don't believe at this time, obviously, we're going to have a time frame before this gets started. And certainly anything that comes back to us is going to go through both bodies of the House and be signed by the governor before that issue may be coming up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Along the same line of questioning, I know there are annual reports from different agencies. Was it your anticipation that this would flow with other annual reports coming out of the Department of Law?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I don't see the Judiciary Committees on either side, neither one are year-round committees per se. And I can't imagine, unless something very egregious comes through, that we'd want to call a special, and we still have to pass legislation, so it'll have to go through the legislative process.
Okay. I do have the Department of Law here. Maybe they can come up with any ideas or any suggestions or any comments. Maybe that'd be the better way of saying it. So thank you, Mr. Pound. And is the Department of Law prepared to speak to this in some
Mr. Chairman, there's another attorney who's assigned to this bill that is very familiar with it.
Okay.
Right now I'm blanking out on his name.
Okay. All right.
And he's not online?
I don't know that I have anybody online at this point. All right. Well, because... All right. Well, there are, I think, some pretty good questions on what we might expect in the form of a report. And probably wouldn't be a bad idea to know, Mr. Pound, what is already taking place, if it would be something that could be easily assimilated, and what form that might take. Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I often wonder, I hear about these lawsuits, and often I read about them in the paper, so I think it's a good idea to let the legislature know what's going on. I think what would be helpful also is, yeah, just maybe if we could get a report every year on sort of in this vein on what we're litigating. I mean, what is being litigated? How much money are we spending on litigation? Are we winning or losing our cases? Because as a Judiciary Committee, you know, if we're sort of focusing in the wrong directions or not focusing in the right directions, I would certainly think we'd want some oversight on that. You know, if we're spending too much or too little in a certain area, it's probably a good idea for a legislature to have some sort of a say on that and at least know what's going on, because I often just read about it in the paper.
Right. And I agree. And the federal law issue, whether it's regulation, congressional law, or some of these special orders, like the president may put out an order, they come at various different times and places and have huge impacts on us generally. So, but it would be interesting to know if they already assimilate some of this stuff. They opine on them within their own agency. Maybe it is just something that could be easily drafted and sent over to the legislature. So I think this is a good request. It would be interesting to find out from the Department of Law. So if on Monday, if you want, you can go ahead and talk to the Department of Law person that has been assigned to this particular bill and get them before us for questions. If you could see to that, Mr. Pound. Yeah, and because I think, and I think you have a question, Senator?
I'll comment when you get that.
All right, your comment?
Just that I really commend this effort and what I understand to be its motive, and I don't want it to be construed that I, and probably all of us, are just interested in the popular issues that come up and so on. You know, for me, a huge issue is the whole federalism, land issues, you know, and so on and so forth, and I hope somebody is watching the farm. You know, and that our Department of Law is zealously, somebody is watching for federal actions that really affect how we do our business and try to fulfill our mission. So.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And there are several things. We make a continual run at policy making, and it would be nice to know maybe there are things that in working in cooperation with them, it may work, but there may be times where we have to stand up and challenge them. There's no doubt both of those could be the case. So, we'll go ahead and hold this bill over, and if you could make sure that we'll get that kind of question and answer, and then if you have some public testimony, my intention is to have some public testimony on House Bill 69 as well, so that could dominate some time on Monday. We'll go ahead and bring this up again on Monday.
Thank you,
all right,
sir. We'll see you Monday.
Thank you for introducing the bill. We're going to go to, then we're going to lay aside House Bill 83, and we'll go to Senate Bill now, 36. Senate Bill 36, we have the version C before us, I do believe. Is that correct, Karen?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we do have the version C before us. I want to make sure we also have an amendment. If you look at the amendment, I'll move the amendment if one of you will object. Go ahead and I'll move amendment number one.
Object.
Which would be a C.1 with my name on it. I'll call it number one. And do we have it at the recorders? Okay. And this would, in fact, you want to speak to it? At the Department of Law, actually. So why don't we have the Department of Law come on forward, and why don't you, as a sponsor representative, come on forward as well, so get you both at the table. Annie, I think this was something that you felt had been either inadvertently left out or needed to be added. So.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I.
You want to move that mic over for her?
For.
Thank you.
Presenting, taking up this amendment. I feel a little bit awkward because it deals with civil liability, and I am not in the civil division, but I have personally spoken with Susan Cox, who said that she endorsed this amendment as being one that would be preferable to what is in the what ended up being in the CS, I'm sorry. So I appreciate your offering it. According to Ms. Cox, it protects employees and law enforcement agencies to a better degree than what had been put in the CS. So thank you for considering it.
And so the way I understand this amendment, it will help those in law enforcement and those activating the vulnerable alert, that if there is some kind of a miscommunication, there's really no civil liability. They're trying to do what is right, and therefore there's some civil liability protection.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And anything from the sponsor? Senator Wilkowski has a question.
Mr. Chair. Would this be for negligence, recklessness, and intentional? In other words, if looking at line 6, if someone intentionally failed to participate, or would we be exempting them from liability, or is this just for negligent?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it doesn't specify. So I think it would be for all circumstances where a person did not participate.
So, Mr. Chair, and you know, it's a policy call. I certainly agree with the intent on negligence. If someone is negligent, I guess it's a different, you know, standard. If you call up the police department and it's an elderly person that maybe the dispatcher really doesn't like, has a personal conflict with, and they intentionally refuse to do this. I'm just wondering if we want to extend the liability exemption that far. Is there a good policy reason to do that, do you think?
Through the chair, well, it is a policy call on your part. Sometimes these immunity provisions do just apply to negligent failure, but that's for you to decide.
And previously, what we had was an exemption of civil liability for newspaper publishers, people who operate communications, right? And this was adding law enforcement agency or employee of law enforcement agency.
Can you speak to that?
A person or a group. So it's a little bit broader definition.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, this is the provision that was originally in the bill, so I think the bill sponsor can speak to it maybe better than I could.
Just identify yourself. And
for the record, my name is Nathan Zensi, staff to Senator Ellis. Senator Ellis is traveling and apologizes for not being able to be present. At issue here is, I believe, the changes really made on lines 4 and lines 5. You are correct, Senator Wilikowski. This could potentially apply to the situation you describe. However, I believe in inserting this language, which actually was present in the bill that passed the Senate 20-0 last session, it's just you are creating a new vulnerable adult response plan, and I believe the intention is to make it as least burdensome to law enforcement agencies as possible, and certainly our hope is law enforcement agencies would act in good faith and in accordance to the public trust that we place in them.
Is there anybody else who wants to comment on that, on this particular amendment?
Never happened, Mr. Chair. Probably extremely rare case, but I can just envision, 10 years down the road, that someone intentionally fails to implement this, and then we're back here for it. But you put public faith in law enforcement agencies, and you expect they're going to do the right thing.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. In general, most folks who work, firemen, police, and all those things, enjoy a significant amount of immunity from things they do on the job. And but there is a provision if their misconduct is the bar criminal negligence, or very. Tell me what gets them over the line and be liable or civilly or criminally.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I would like to have one of our civil attorneys address that. I don't want to misinform you. I think it's a fairly high bar, as I recall, but I'm not the person to give you legal advice on that. I'm sorry.
So I feel quite comfortable saying that whatever that is, it's well established in law and practice.
That's correct.
Kind of universally applied. So that, I would think, that the thing we're worried about is covered under that general provision for folks.
Through the chair, that for general police work and law enforcement work, this is specific to this particular conduct. So I think this would, as far as I understand it, this would be the immunity that would apply under the circumstances of Silver Alert.
If I may continue. But Silver Alert fits under the whole category of search and rescue that law enforcement do many days, if not most. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't think that anyone would reason that this is some kind of a carve-out. Mm-hmm. It's not on different than Amber Alert, Kiley's Law, mm-hmm. or those sorts of things, which are a way of organizing specific kinds of things. So, anyways, I'm just an old fisherman, but it seems to me that our law system has dealt with these issues for a long time.
Maybe for the sponsor, did you look at the same, was the same standard used in what we now have for the different alert systems?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. State by state, there are different standards held. I guess one comment or distinction that I wanted to add is we're creating the new Silver Alert program and a missing vulnerable adult response plan. It's a prompt action plan for a special case of missing persons. the circumstances that Senator Wilikowski bring up. You know, at a certain point, that missing person, I suspect, would be governed under conventional missing persons guidelines, independent of the more rapid, we hope would be a more rapid silver alert. And then, so if you really did have someone acting negligently, I frankly am not familiar with what the current policies on that for regular missing person searches, but whatever governs negligence in normal missing person searches, at some point they would be governed by that.
And we're talking a little bit about civil liability here, but there must be other liabilities that both the those who are participants, including law enforcement, will do, whether it's ethical, even criminal, I would imagine, if there's a requirement. Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with, Mr. Chair. If someone were to intentionally or even recklessly or probably even negligently not do these things, they're going to get punished, probably fired from their job. So I just raised the question. I just wanted to know. It's a policy call.
Anytime you say not civilly liable, it always raises that flag. It just does. And so any objection to the amendment?
I remove my objection.
All right. So we'll have the amendment in. And actually, pretty much brought this bill up into the open. What we're trying to do here, we're trying to institute a solar alert system, and it's pretty directive at this point. It looks to me like saying the Department of Public Safety, in cooperation with the Department of Military and Vets, shall, using all the equipment they had, develop and implement a missing and vulnerable adult plan. So I think, you know, any closing comments on this? Because I'd like to bring it to a vote if anybody else is willing to.
Just to close, I'd like to thank the committee for their time today and reemphasize the broad range of support we have behind this.
And I appreciate the work that the sponsor's done on it. And I had originally some objections. They all kind of got ironed up, so I think we're good to go. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move sponsor substitute or committee sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 36 as amended from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Any objection to moving it from committee? All right, we'll move Senate Bill 36 from Judiciary. Thank you very much. And let's just take a little bit. Let's bring the Judiciary Committee back together. Right now we're going to take up Senate CS for CS for House Bill 69. As you can see, that's a couple of CSs. So, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we adopt Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 69, and that would be the / I version.
All right. Any objection? We'll have that before us. And actually, I'll have my staff, Jordan Schilling, go ahead and point out those changes and speak to them a little bit. Please put yourself on the record, Jordan.
Sure. So my name is Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. So the first change is just a title change to conform to some of the changes that we made later in the bill. So the first substantial change you'll find on page 4, line 28, and we just added in the words, violates the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, or Article 1, Section 19 of the Alaska Constitution. And that's just a kind of a point of clarification. On page 5.
Right, you're going too fast. Page 4, line 28.
Yep. Correct. Starting at violates the Second Amendment. And that's just to say that any future law that is unconstitutional and unenforceable is unenforceable because it violates the Second Amendment. So.
All right.
Then the next changes are on page 5, line 4. And the prior versions said that the Attorney General may file suit and use all of the resources necessary. We changed the may to a shall so that it is no longer optional, and we removed the provision that allowed the Attorney General to use all resources to just say may file legal action necessary. And that's the intent of that, is to just make sure that things like the permanent fund wouldn't be at his disposal to file suit.
But it was the trade-off to that was being directive, to say you have to file suit.
Correct.
Which, in talking to the Attorney General, they said that that would be their expectation anyway. So, and that was really the main changes, right?
That's correct.
There, just for the members' edification, on page 3, a suggestion had come to me, and I want you to just think about it. On page 3, line 7, under parens A, where it says infringe on a person's right, it had been suggested to me that we put in the word illegally. I just want you to ponder that under A and B, illegally infringe or illegally deny. I haven't settled on it yet, but that was a suggestion that came to me. It may be softening it up too much, so something to think about. So I wanted you to know that that had come to me by way of some legal beagles. So we do have some public testimony. The bill at this point is somewhat different than what came to us from the House. There's no doubt. Probably the two provisions that we put in here, one is probably less controversial in that we took some nullification issues dealing with other individual rights. But the big issue that we took out that has created some stir, no small stir, I should say, is we took the portion out that said that the state would arrest and charge with a felony a federal official. And I just could not figure out how that was going to be handled and still move the state forward and protect individual rights. My thinking was that it would actually have caused enough of a backlash that we might have actually gone backwards. So that was my concern. My guess is we're going to hear people that don't agree with my concern, but I'm certainly willing to do that.
For the record, Mr. Chair, was there a legal opinion on whether or not the state could do that or whether or not that would be constitutional?
Yes, there is. I do believe we have a legal opinion on that.
Yeah, are we referring to, through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, are we referring to the change on the last page,
the
changing
House
the
bill,
May
no.
to the shall?
Yeah, legal just, opinion on the House bill.
Because that was a question that I had as well, as whether, you know, could the state arrest?
Yes, we do have a legal opinion. I'd be happy to get it to your office.
Well, okay. I think it's in your packet.
Yeah, okay.
I think we have now four legal opinions.
Is that the January 16, 2013 one?
Sorry.
That's okay. I don't want to delay.
I believe it is. Okay. Yes.
Thank you. And my suggestion is go ahead and kind of peruse those over the weekend or on Monday morning, whenever you can, because on Monday my intention is to bring it up, hear the rest of the public testimony, and then bring it up to a vote. But even on the language we put in, we have legal opinions contesting our ability to do this. And there comes a point where you say, look, I think that there needs to be some pushback, and if the best legal tools we can find, and then pushback. So with that, we do have some people on testimony. I have Tom.
Tom Bizarre.
Okay. Tom Bizard is here in Juneau, and I have Mike Coons and Palmer. Mike, do you have any time constraints?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes. Why don't you go ahead and identify yourself and get on the line and give us your testimony. I appreciate you calling in.
Okay, Senator Coghill and members, my name is Mike Coons, and I'm speaking for myself. Senator Coghill, let me say that I'm very thankful for your staff, especially Jordan and Karen, for listening to my concerns and questions and giving me the needed information to understand not only this legislation but the workings of government. I fully support the addition to HB 69 as to ensuring no agency may assist the feds in the event of them trying to enforce laws that violate our Second Amendment. Those sections are strong and afford a great deal of protection for all Alaskans. I am pleased that you have changed the may to shall as to the AG using all powers to defend Alaskans. The concern by the AG that the original version with Class C felony was unenforceable and unconstitutional, I still strongly disagree with. One of the concerns that I am hard-pressed to understand is that the Commissioner of Public Safety Office has concerns on enforcement, yet in the testimony given by Lieutenant Dial, the opposite was stated. I quote from that hearing, Senator Dyson asked him, Lieutenant Dial, as to the last version of the bill, do you see anything here that would be, that cause problems for you and the fellow public safety officers in performing their duties? Lieutenant Dial said, the department has reviewed the CS and we do not have any problems with the changes. We do not see any problems if this legislation were to pass. Then Senator Ryakovsky asked Lieutenant Dial, would you have any concerns with the original version of the bill as it came to the Senate? Lieutenant Dial's answer, and I quote, there was some initial discussion on how we would address violations by federal officers of the prior version of the bill. We were able to work these out. Essentially, if the prior version had become law, we would have investigated that violation as we do any other violation of law and just referred those to the Department of Law for review and prosecution. Other than that, we have no concerns with the bill, end quote. So, Senator Coghill, does the Commissioner of Public Safety have a concern about enforcing Alaska law and the Alaska Constitution and the U.S. Constitution upon a federal agent who is enforcing something that violates not only our Second Amendment, but our Fourth and Fifth Amendments or not? What is weighing heavily on me is the seemingly daily attacks upon our liberties by President Obama relating to not just this aspect, but so many others as well. From thehill.com today, the title is Obama Uses Executive Powers to Move Gun Control Agenda Forward. From his executive order, Establishment of Presidential Commission, the first sentence says, by authority vested in me by the President, as President, by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, which I have read Article 2 and don't see anything about executive orders. Then you got the DHS purchasing 2,700 mining assistance vehicles, some coming to Alaska, 1.6 billion rounds of ammo and variety of real assault weapons. Will this bill and law be enough to protect us as Americans, much less proud Alaskans? An example to show the need to stop an ever-encroaching might makes right, New Jersey had a case about a week ago when a gentleman's son had a picture taken of him with his new AR. Someone called Children's Services about that picture. Police arrived with Children's Services and demanded the homeowner open the safe to see if all firearms were safe and registered. The homeowner did the right thing, had his lawyer on speakerphone, and refused to comply because there was no warrant. The Children's Services person refused to give her name and to show her credentials. Police officers and her were inside the home and told to leave. The comment by the officers was they would get a warrant and be back. No warrant ever came, and now the governor is looking into it. In closing, this version does give us more protection than exists now, although it is not enough as a deterrence. Without it, we are vulnerable. I hope that in the event that President Obama decides to disregard our and the many other states' laws like ours, that next year's deterrence of the Class C felony can be added. Thus, I reluctantly support this version, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Mike, thank you, and you've been a consistent caller on this, and so I appreciate your interest and your testimony. Thank you very much. And we will continue the discussion, and for what it's worth, we will be doing public testimony again on Monday, so anybody that you know that wants to chime in, you might just give them the heads up. Right now we have Tom Bazard in committee room with us. Tom, why don't you come on and give your name, and have you had a chance to look at this newer version?
I have.
All right. Go ahead and give us your testimony. Give us any affiliation.
My name is Tom Bizzard. I'm a local citizen here in the Juneau area, and I am the current commander of the Alaska Citizens Militia, Juneau. I do speak for them. I'm 55 years old, married with children, most of which are adults. And one is currently serving as a U.S. Marine, and he informed us yesterday that he's on his way to Korea. God protect him. We're so very proud of our son, Russell Bizzard. I, too, served in the Armed Forces as a mechanic in the U.S. Navy Seabees, and today I'm a business owner and current commander of the militia, of the local militia. My U.S. Marine son and I, as well as millions of other American patriots, took an oath to defend and protect our country, its laws and constitution, to protect it from enemies both foreign and domestic. And due to recent events, I fear our citizenry may be preparing for a domestic war against our own government, the federal government. I believe this because of the unprecedented and staggering purchases of ammunition, military-grade equipment, construction of what appear to be detention facilities, all by DHS and FEMA. Couple these facts with a president that in 2008 said he wanted to build a civilian military as well equipped and funded as the U.S. military. Coupled with a constant onslaught of continued federal regulation and encroachment into our very lives, and you can see why I and many of the people I associate with feel this way. Is the DHS preparing for war? Against who? This situation has many Americans concerned to the point that they have purchased all available firearms of capacity, magazines for those rifles and handguns, and ammunition from the store shelves across this great country. I reload. I could not find the stuff I needed to reload. And it's all basic, common stuff if you're a reloader. History can be a great and often is our best teacher. But when we fail to learn from history, we are doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past. The history I refer to is, and this is important, I know that you gentlemen understand this, but this is very important. It must be spoken once again. That in 1911, Turkey established gun control from 1915 through 1917, and 1.5 million Armenians, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. This scenario played itself out again in 1929 in the Soviet Union, and from 29 to 53, 20 million, count them, dissidents, unable to defend themselves, were rounded up and exterminated. And that doesn't include the 30 million that Uncle Joe Stalin starved to death in the Ukraine. China established gun control in 35, and from 48 through 52, 20 million political dissidents again were rounded up, unable to defend themselves, and exterminated. Germany established gun control in 38, and from 39 through 45, leaving a populace unable to defend itself against the Gestapo and the SS, hundreds of thousands died as a result. Guatemala established gun control in 64. From 64 through 81, 100,000 Mayan Indians were rounded up and exterminated. Cambodia established gun control in 56. From 75 through 77, 1.2 million educated people were rounded up and exterminated. Uganda established gun control in 1970, and from 71 through 79, 300,000 Christians were rounded up and exterminated. The total dead said to be 2 to 3 million. All total for the 20th century, we have over 56 million people that were rounded up and murdered under the name of gun control. And in our own country, we too have had gun confiscation and government troops killing Americans. Yes, it has happened here too. There are over 100 such events that have happened in our history, but I won't note them all. But one most notable is the massacre at Wounded Knee, where in 1890, 300 Sioux made up of men, women, and children lay dead after being ambushed by federal troops. These facts are not easy to find in our history books, but they are the facts nonetheless, well documented, in fact, by a Sioux talker who actually reported exactly everything that happened there. And his story was corroborated by other survivors. And in modern times, we still have events too. And there was an event that took place here in Alaska about 125 years ago when the U.S. Navy, then the only government authority in Alaska, the federal government, shelled and burned the village of Angoon after a dispute and an alleged hostage situation, an indisputable fact. The fact is, our government will and has attacked and killed its own citizens. I mean, it is just as plain as that. We're the only nation on this planet that ever dropped a nuclear weapon, and we did it twice. And I'm not saying that it was the wrong choice. I'm just saying that precedence has been set. If this government deems someone an enemy, they will trample the Constitution and just go after them and kill them. And in modern times, we still have events, too. Too many to name here except for Katrina, where we saw the police chief of New Orleans, a man charged with protecting his community, a man that had taken an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, give the order to go door-to-door and confiscate firearms from law-abiding citizens in their own homes. And the NRA has well documented this event. Yes, it does appear that history is a great teacher and that we sometimes fail to learn from the lessons taught and then proceed to make those same mistakes again. Ask me if I think my government wants to kill me, and I'll say, well, that depends on just how much of a troublemaker I am in their eyes. I testify before you today as a law-abiding citizen, a gun owner, and a U.S. Navy veteran, and I am concerned, and as the commander of the Alaska Citizens Militia Juneau, and I am concerned that our central government is again, as history has taught us, out of control and planning and executing a major power grab unlike anything this country has ever seen. It may be war against the American people. I, with all due respect, remind each member here today that you too took an oath to protect and defend both the Alaska Constitution and the United States Constitution, to protect them and us. I urge you to put back the felony language in House Bill 69, to give some real teeth to this bill. By putting the felony language back in, we the people have more power to resist such attempts while awaiting for law enforcement to arrest federal agents. We citizens will have the needed power to arrest and use what force is necessary to apprehend and detain any federal agent that violates this law. If left as a misdemeanor, our arresting powers are limited to that of a voice command. Additionally, if this bill includes the felony language, we join at least 20 other states that have adopted and passed some kind of firearm-related legislation recently introduced or currently pending. And I won't read all the states, but I'm sure that you folks probably know who they are. It's my opinion that federal encroachment seems to know no bounds and that nullification is an excellent way for our state to exercise the 10th Amendment in the Bill of Rights. In closing, I would personally like to see much more of this nullification concept employed, especially concerning the National Defense Authorization Act, allowing the unconstitutional indefinite detention of American citizens on American soil without due process, clearly in violation of the Fifth Amendment to our Constitution. Please stand your ground. Support this bill and include the felony language. Do not fall prey to the advice of lawyers whom are not thinking constitutionally, but advise based on precedents. Please remember that because some judge says it is not constitutional does not necessarily constitute that he or she is correct. We definitely need this legislation. As I testify before you today, the U.S. Senate is still undecided as to whether the Feinstein confiscation legislation could be included. Many other states are doing this for the same constitutional reasons we are, federal overreach. We must send this shot across the overreaching bow of the monstrous federal government and join with the other states that are working towards a constitutional solution to the ever-growing federal power grab. Thank you very much for your time and allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much. Very well thought out. Just for what it's worth, the emergency confiscation that happened in during the Katrina days sparked a law that went through this legislature that forbade that kind of confiscation. So at least we responded to it properly.
I'm aware of that, Senator, and again, thank you. We law-abiding citizens are so thankful for our Alaska legislature and our governor. You folks really have got your minds pointed in the correct direction. We believe that.
Good. It's always nice to hear a nice word after being criticized.
I'm not. Please, sir. With all due respect.
I know it's all with all due respect.
It Senator, comes from the heart.
Senator Dyson has a question.
Yeah. I would enjoy a copy of the history that you did of both gun confiscation and the atrocities in the last century and a half. That was well done. I've been hearing for a few months about Homeland Security buying huge amounts of firearms and ammunition and so on, and lately about perhaps armored cars, you know, armored personnel carriers or something like that. Can you point me to some good sources, credible sources on that information, on that, what's going on? I also, I think, read in the last week that Congress has got some kind of investigation going on.
There are a number of very credible sources. The easiest way to get to the information from a credible reporting source is actually to go to WND.com. That stands for World News Daily. WND.com. They are very much a right-wing, far-right, very conservative, frame it any way you want, organization, no question about it, but they quote their sources, highly respected. Breitbart.com also has, Breitbart.com has credible information. The Drudge Report at Drudge.com. These are all highly accredited and well-respected organizations that have that information available. And I will dig up others if I can find them, and I'll email them to your office.
And a copy?
Well, this one I was planning to submit for the record.
Yeah, good, no, good enough. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And again, thank you. I realize that you're getting testimony from experts and people that know a lot more about the strict language of law than the common person does. But that doesn't mean they're always right.
First of all, thank you for your service to our country. Thank you for your son. And I know your heart goes with him, and ours deeply respects him. The Constitution we take very, very seriously, and we will try to do our best to make sure that when it comes time for nullification, we have kind of the best laid plans we can, because I think whether it's under the NDAA, which I agree with you on, or under the firearms, our guarantee under the Constitution for firearms, we want to make sure that we're using the best resources of the state to defend not only the citizens, but their right.
Yes, sir, and that is it. It's the Constitution. All of our power stems from the Constitution. It's for we the people. It's of we the people. Yeah.
So it's an interesting balance sometimes.
I think that, if I may add my opinion, I really think that we are moving in the correct direction by handling these matters in a legal and constitutional manner. We just dread the day that the first shot gets fired.
Yes, I totally agree with you.
We do not want that to ever happen.
And is a country that was based in good law, common law was along constitutional law. Now statutory law seems to be trumping most common law. So we have changed that venue down through the years. But I want to keep us in good rule of law for fear of anarchy. And so
you're on board with that.
Yeah. So to me, that's to make sure that our passions are directed in that good rule of law. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I was kind of expecting more public comment today, but to be fair, I had been telling people Monday that we would spend time taking comment. And so for those, we're going to hear probably that very tension of how do you have teeth in this law, and then how do you practically move forward? And I am convinced at this point what we've got here is probably, I think, a better approach, but I am open to suggestion. For the members and for those listening, I found a statute in our criminal statute, 1176.110, that states this, and I'm going to read it to you. A person commits a crime of interference with constitutional rights if the person injures, oppresses, threatens, or intimidates another person with the intent to deprive the person of a right, privilege, or immunity in fact guaranteed by the Constitution or laws of this state. So we do have some criminal teeth already, and I'm going to see what the nexus is between what we're doing here and this particular law in our criminal code. So I just wanted to make sure that you understand that we actually have some places, and I'll find out how that's operative. So my intention is to move this bill on Monday, along with the revisers bill, and then we'll bring up knives, gravity, and switchblades bill, another light duty bill, and then more boring retirement plans, Roth IRAs, and probate, which is commonly called the trust bill. So, with that, the Senate Judiciary is adjourned for the day.